Hello, it's time to read the Des Moines Register for today, Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Pat Steele, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Deanna Snyder. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. And then we'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines in today's Des Moines Register. Today, looking at a very nice day, high of 67, a low of 43, partial sunshine, winds will be out of the northwest around 8 to 16 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, winds out of the southwest, and looking at a low of 43. Tomorrow, another beautiful day on tap, the high of 70 and a low of 47, although it will be mostly cloudy, and a little cooler on Thursday, a high of 61 and a low of 40. Our normal high for this time of year is 60, so we'll be above that. Normal low is 38. Our record high for this date was set back in 1931, 87 degrees, and record low, 20 degrees, back in 1972. Sunshine today, sunrise today, at 6:44 a.m., and sunset tonight at 7:49 p.m. From the front page of Des Moines Register, a tech firm pushed the Betts probe and then walked. That's one of our stories. Also a story on the Iowa women's basketball team, and a private psychiatric hospital is proposed. From the Metro and Iowa section, corrections employee alleges racial bias. A Des Moines gang member is given a 23-year term. And a story on yesterday's eclipse. So that's our headlines and weather. And now here is Deanna with her first story.
Thank you, Pat. Well, I just have to read about Caitlin Clark. Carve your own path, that's in quotes, and the team did just that. Talent, tenacity, and love drove Iowa players. This is from Dargan Southard of Des Moines Register, Dateline Cleveland. The homegrown superstar, heaving shots from insane distances, drew in many of the fans, captivating them with her basketball talent and a broad smile that rarely wavered. However, when those most enamored by Caitlin Clark decided to stick around a little longer, they discovered this unprecedented Iowa women's basketball team was full of endearing elements. The tenacity of Kate Martin, the resiliency of Gabby Marshall, the youthful innocence of Hannah Stolke, the perseverance of Sydney Affalter, and much more, all unified under a textbook culture that didn't seem manufactured or fake. A coaching staff loaded with loyalty kept everyone grounded as the stardom soared, allowing these Hawkeyes to shine brightly even amid another painful ending. Iowa certainly would have preferred to cash in this year's national title shot against South Carolina, especially after falling in the same scenario last season versus Louisiana State University. Instead, South Carolina beat Iowa 87-75 in Sunday's NCAA tournament final. But the reality is, the Hawkeyes didn't need a ring to validate their widespread impact. Their mature response when the spotlight intensified did that long ago. Iowa Associate head coach Jan Jensen said, "This team showed that you can be so successful and you can carve your own path. These guys did it with class. They did it with fun. They did it with love. Man, do we love each other." That was evident in every role this Iowa squad had to offer. Positive examples left and right that permeated every basketball area and beyond. Those in the coaching world will gravitate to head coach Lisa Bluter's steadiness and dedication from NAIA beginnings to the only major university she ever wanted to lead. More than two decades passed before she guided the Hawkeyes to the NCAA tournament's final weekend, yet nothing changed when the attention grew. Clark's rapid stardom could have easily become an internal distraction if handled incorrectly. Bluter and her veteran staff never gave that a chance to matter. Same goes for Clark, who put on a consistency clinic each time she sat behind the mic, with the millions hanging on her every word. for all the unending love sent her way throughout this magical senior season, relentless critiques and criticism lurked around every corner. Clark's mere existence ignited distractions and controversies she couldn't control while ascending up the ladder of college basketball legends. Her ability to absorb it all without the joy fading resonated as much as any logo, three-pointer, or historical milestone. Clark said, "This group has gone about it in the right way in every single thing that we've done in every phase of our life. I think that's what you can be the most proud of. We truly have each other's back. Maybe we weren't always the most skilled. Maybe we weren't always the tallest. Maybe we weren't always the fastest. But we just believed. We knew we could be in those. We knew we could be in these moments. We trusted one another. That took a couple of years to get to that point. Taking a seesawing path to this final ride, most notably suffering a massive NCAA tournament upset against Creighton 2 years ago, only to rebound with a national championship game appearance last season, put Iowa's cohesion in the perfect spot to handle this year's high expectations. Time and time again, the Hawkeyes' stars allow this group to maximize its full potential." Clark likely doesn't follow up a magnificent junior season with a legendary senior campaign if Martin's influence isn't there, a true friendship hardened through tough love and support when needed. The 6 years Martin gave to Iowa women's basketball set a new leadership standard that future Hawkeyes will try to emulate. Just as relatable was the basketball turbulence Marshall and Afalter each fought through, ultimately rewarded in the biggest moments for their patience and dedication. Another tough offense year, up until the final month, could have buried Marshall's confidence. Same goes for Afalter. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. After minimal playing time in her first 2 seasons, both stayed the course and delivered vital postseason performances as Iowa won the Big Ten tournament and its first 5 games of NCAA tournament. Creating the opportunity to do so wasn't happening with Stuhlke's crucial progression. The soft-spoken sophomore played out of position all season, dealt with multiple lingering injuries, and shouldered significant responsibility as Clark's interior sidekick, all while stepping away outside her comfort zone amid Iowa's year-long media frenzy. Stuhlke likely will be the program centerpiece next season, buoyed by a newfound confidence that grows with every outing. Connections to those outside the championship starting five strengthened as well. The outpouring of love and support for Molly Davis hasn't stopped following her late-season knee injury and unsuccessful quest for a postseason return until a thoughtful gesture from Bluder allowed her to take the floor in the final seconds. Although everyone loves the superstar, those in supporting roles like Sharon Goodman and Jada Gianfi are way more common across all levels of athletics. Remaining locked in as a teammate when the minutes are sparse doesn't happen without an elite culture designed to value everyone. The Hawkeyes normalized this season, much as anything else. "More than anything, our legacy is what we've brought to the state of Iowa," Martin said. "All the joy and the fun. It's pretty cool to be coached by Coach Bluder and the culture she's built at Iowa. I think just watching us, you can see the joy that we have. I think that's the main thing for our legacy." Excuse me. "I just feel super grateful. It's because I worked really hard and I dreamed big. I'm not some all-American five-star recruit out of high school. I never was. And people believed in me. I believe in myself, and here I am. So if I can do it, so can you." When Clark and the Hawkeyes walked off the American Airlines Center court in Dallas last April, having come up 40 minutes short of a national title, skepticism swirled about whether Iowa could ever reach a moment of that magnitude again. Sure, Clark was returning and Iowa was expected to start this season high up in the national polls, but it took 30 years just to get the Hawkeyes back to one Final Four. Was demanding another so soon really a reasonable expectation? Turns out the answer was a resounding yes. While last year's run centered on shocking the world, this season's surge saw Iowa dominate from a position of power. A robust 34-5 record, a third straight Big Ten tournament title, a once unfathomable number one seed in the NCAA tournament, a second title game berth, each accomplishment coming with more attention than ever before. This was no plucky underdog proving everyone wrong, as is often the case when Hawkeye athletics garners some kind of national spotlight. This was Iowa charging straight toward the upper echelon of women's basketball, determined to bust through the sport's seemingly impenetrable wall of elites while not changing up one bit. Iowa did exactly that. The path it carved likely will never be replicated. Bluter said, "To be around women that are driven every single day, that come to work positive and believing in themselves and each other, it is so empowering." Pat, back to you.
Thank you, Deanna. And this next story is pretty long, so I think we'll split this one up. So I'll look at you halfway, and then you can take it home from there. Tech firm PushBets probe, and then it walked. It offered tracking tools to monitor sports gambling. This is a story written by Tyler Jett, and it's the first of two parts. In early 2022, a powerful tech company offered to help the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation Sports Wagering Unit. The division, which launched in 2021 to investigate fraud in the state's new online betting market, was struggling to track and monitor gamblers as the industry grew rapidly in Iowa. Unlike the monitoring by DCI's gambling and horse racing investigators based at casinos and Prairie Meadows Racetrack, the agents on the sports betting unit didn't have tools to see who was placing wagers from anywhere in the state. Then in March 2022, the unit received an offer from GeoComply, a Canadian company that contracts with sports books like FanDuel and DraftKings to track the locations of their users. GeoComply said it would share the company's software with the DCI and train its agents on how to track bets around the state as they happen. DCI Special Agent in Charge Troy Nelson told Brian Orkilla, then director of the Iowa Racing Gaming Commission, in a July 2022 email. He said, "We can make huge gains in the discovery of illegal activity that we know is taking place." What followed, however, became a statewide controversy. Without a warrant, a DCI agent used the tool to discover that Iowa State University and University of Iowa athletes were using wagering accounts registered to parents and friends to place bets, and some bet on their own games. The investigation netted 25 arrests. It also attracted outrage from politicians, coaches, fans, and sports commentators who accused the DCI of violating high-profile athletes' constitutional rights. A Des Moines Register review of hundreds of DCI and Gaming Commission emails has revealed the origins of the controversial case, showing for the first time that GeoComply played a prominent role in how law enforcement investigated the athletes. In addition to giving the DCI its software and training agents on how to spot suspicious bets around Iowa, GeoComply officials held monthly meetings with law enforcement investigators around the country to explain where to find, in quote, hot spots, unquote, of illegal betting, the Register's review found. A DCI agent's memo, meanwhile, suggests that GeoComply helped coach Iowa officials on how to write state regulations that would allow the geolocation company to turn over information without a warrant and without informing sports books. The Register's review also shows how dependent sports betting investigators have been on the whims of private companies. Without many rights to monitor online wagering in Iowa's current law, DCI agents depended on GeoComply. In January, when GeoComply cut the DCI's access to the tool amid the rising controversy, the agency was once again left without any reliable way to monitor sports betting, an industry viewed as ripe for fraud, money laundering, and addiction. John Holden, an Oklahoma State management professor who studied sports betting, said, "People are going to be very shocked with how involved GeoComply was with this. We effectively have created this self-regulatory system if this is how it's supposed to work. Do we want that? I think that's a fair question. Can you trust these companies to do this job? Given the outcome that we've seen in Iowa, I think there's questions that they have to answer." Founded in 2011 by online gambling company executives who saw the need for geolocation services for gambling companies, GeoComply has grown into an industry giant since the U.S. Supreme Court allowed states, including Iowa, to legalize sports betting in 2018. The company now contracts with the country's biggest mobile betting companies, including FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. GeoComply's clients control 90% of the online gambling market, and investors value the company at more than $1 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal. When users register with online betting companies, they consent to those businesses sharing their data, including their locations. Those companies, in turn, share the information with GeoComply, which uses Wi-Fi signals, GPS cell tower signals, and other data to track a user's location. Sports betting companies must track users' locations because they must abide by different regulations and laws depending on where a bettor places a wager. As it has grown, GeoComply has become a go-to source in the media for information about the prevalence of sports betting around the country. During one presentation, GeoComply showed that 1,200 users opened mobile betting apps inside Niall Kinnick Stadium during Iowa's 2022 season opener against South Dakota State, records obtained by the Register show. The company also cultivated close relationships with law enforcement agencies. In Iowa, DCI Special Agent Brian Sanger led the sports betting unit's use of GeoComply software for investigation. In February 2021, he emailed a GeoComply official for help obtaining data as a part of a joint investigation with the Illinois Gaming Board. Sanger explained that he was looking into a fraud ring, and he asked GeoComply for its special sauce, the company's collection of data, that could show other sports books that the suspects were using. In response, GeoComply Senior Vice President of Compliance, Lindsay Slade, told Sanger her company had found more data points for the investigators. She also suggested that GeoComply could better assist Iowa officials in future investigations. She said, "Perhaps it's best we discuss on the phone to determine how to move forward and coordinate data shares." After the call, Sanger wrote a report titled, in quote, "Why GeoComply Should Be Licensed in Iowa," unquote. He explained that the state's current methods for investigating sports betting did not work well. He said sports betting investigators did not have a way to examine wagers without first tipping off sports books. He wrote, "This is an item of concern when investigating high-level patrons who have close connects with top-level casino sportsbook management." Sanger, however, offered a solution. The Gaming Commission should write a regulation requiring geolocation companies like GeoComply to get a license from the state. He said other states had created such a regulation. Without the change, Sanger wrote, GeoComply would not have to abide by Iowa warrants or subpoenas because the company stores its information outside the state in a Virginia data center. But with licensing, Iowa regulators could create a rule that required GeoComply to turn over information upon request. If the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission followed through with licensing, Sanger wrote, GeoComply would turn over the information without a warrant. Further, the company would not tell its sportsbook clients. Sanger did not say where he came up with the ideas, but in part of the report, he referenced the conversation with Slater. He wrote, GeoComply would prefer to be licensed by the IRGC, so GeoComply could share all their data, analysis, assist, and reports directly with state investigators without violating their sportsbook client contracts, citing what Slater told him. Sanger's paper circulated around the DCI in May 2021. In one email that month, DCI Special Agent in Charge, Rob Winchell, told Sanger that he mentioned the idea during a conference call with the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. Winchell said that the regulators seemed to like the idea very much. In June 2021, DCI Assistant Director David Jobes told agents that the commission was following through on enacting the license requirement. Internally, several DCI agents said the move was an important step to help them investigate sports betting crimes. In February 2022, as GeoComply prepared to apply for a license in Iowa, Slater emailed Sanger to discuss how the company and the investigators could partner. She added that GeoComply had bulked up its own investigative team. Slater wrote, "We now also have dedicated fraud specialists who could do this hands-on with you and who work directly with law enforcement in other states in individual cases," Slater wrote. A month later, according to the emails, GeoComply Risk Services Director Danny Dorenzo discussed the potential partnership with Nelson, the special agent in charge of the DCI's sports wagering unit. Recapping his conversation to other agents, Nelson wrote that GeoComply would give them 3 training sessions about how to use the company's tools. GeoComply gave the agents a demonstration of its tools in March 2022. About 2 months later, Dorenzo emailed law enforcement officers around the country to propose monthly meetings hosted by GeoComply. Dorenzo wrote, "With the rapid spread of online gambling has come the spread of fraud, including identity theft, credit, debit, credit card fraud, money laundering, proxy betting, and who knows what tomorrow will bring." After attending one of GeoComply's meetings in June 2022, Sanger recapped what he learned to other DCI agents. He said GeoComply was picking up evidence of credit card and identity theft among sports bettors. Criminals were stealing victims' information, registering accounts with their credit card numbers, and placing bets. Sometimes, Sanger wrote, GeoComply's tool would identify hotspots, single locations where an unusual number of accounts were apparently placing bets. According to GeoComply's notes from the meeting, regulators and investigators from 10 other states attended the meeting. Sanger wrote, "It sounds like GeoComply is assisting these agencies to locate, find hotspots, which are high activity areas, around the states using their geolocation ping maps," Sanger wrote. While the DCI agents were beginning to learn how to use GeoComply's tools, according to the emails, the company insisted that the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission needed to sign off on law enforcement's use of the tools. Commission leaders weren't sure whether this was a good idea. They canceled a joint call with the DCI and GeoComply in July 2020, with leaders saying internally they didn't know if they could give law enforcement access to the tool. Nelson, a special agent in charge of the DCI Sports Betting Unit, emailed then-Commission Director Ocilio directly 5 days later. He said GeoComply's tools could help curtail the fraud that we know is taking place all of the time but is not being reported by the sports operators. They are very proactive as it relates to sharing information and logging suspicious activity, he said. On July 27th, Ohoreco told Nelson, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that name, it's spelled O-H-O-R-I-L-K-O. Anyway, told Nelson he would discuss the proposal with GeoComply. "I apologize for being apprehensive when it comes to these requests," he said. "Make no mistake, we want to cooperate and help as much as we can." He added that the Gaming Commission had not wanted to be responsible for those decisions, but lawmakers tasked his group with regulating the sports betting industry. He recalled debates in 2019 over how lawmakers should write the legislation. Public safety wanted the access to much more, citing the approved ability to prevent criminal behavior, Orrell Wilco said. On August 4, 2022, Nelson told Ohoreco, in talking to other state regulators and law enforcement, they rely heavily upon the information provided by GeoComply to make their cases. Ohoreco responded that he was still not sure why GeoComply wanted the Gaming Commission to sign off on sharing its tool with the DCI. "My sense is that GeoComply believes this technology could be beneficial for other types of investigations. It may not have a way to control how our agencies use the information, which is why they are looking for the commission to say it's okay. In other words, if either agency uses the information the wrong way, they will advise the aggrieved party that the IRGC, that's the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission, required or gave permission for them to share. I may be looking into this too much, though." A couple of weeks later, after hosting a conference call with DiRenzo and Iowa Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Petrozalik, a gaming commission employee, told GeoComply that the company could share its tool with DCI agents. In September 2022, according to the emails, GeoComply gave login credentials to gaming commission and DCI staff, allowing them to practice using the software. DiRenzo also offered the Gaming Commission a monitoring package and included a 65-inch television and an Apple Mac mini desktop computer. Okay, Deanna, I'll let you take it from there.
GeoComply trained employees in an online meeting that same month. DiRenzo then traveled to Iowa for a November 30th in-person training session. Prior to that meeting, Nelson emailed the DCI sports wagering agents. He wrote, "Bring your laptop as you will be working through live cases." GeoComply showed the DCI how to use the company's pin drop map, which displays dots where people are placing bets around Iowa. The agents could zoom in to specific areas, seeing whether several users were placing bets in a single location. In training slides presented to law enforcement officers around the country, GeoComply highlighted that they could use the tool to look for betting activity in areas where people should not be gambling, such as prisons. In one example, GeoComply explained how the company helped investigators track bets inside a high school. The tool shows only account numbers, not the names of the people placing bets. But according to the presentation, GeoComply could tell that the account users had connected their phones to Apple AirPods, leading investigators to believe the bettors were high school students rather than teachers. In early 2023, according to defense attorney court motions, Sanger used the tool to identify betting activity inside Iowa State and Iowa Athletic buildings. The DCI then subpoenaed sports betting companies, which revealed that athletes and student managers were using accounts registered to parents and friends. Prosecutors in Johnson County, home of the University of Iowa, and Story County, home of Iowa State University, filed charges against 25 defendants for underage gambling and identity theft. The cases, which ensnared Iowa State quarterback Hunter Deckers and Denver Broncos defensive lineman Ioma Uwazurki, a recently graduated Iowa State star player, drew national attention. No other state had seen such a slew of cases involving college athletes using better betting apps, and soon questions began flying about the prosecutions. Meanwhile, GeoComply's stance toward the DCI changed. During a presentation at the Global Gaming Expo in Las Vegas in October, GeoComply staff presented a slideshow titled "Geolocation Best Practices." One slide featured a screenshot of a Wall Street Journal story about the Iowa investigation. In recent investigations, state investigators were called into question for their use of sensitive data without due process, one slide read. Authorized access to sensitive data, including geolocation data, should be clearly outlined in regulations to ensure responsible use and application. On October 26th, GeoComply Government Relations and Licensing Director Gabriel Engel attached the slideshow in an email to several Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission employees. She also said the company was going to cut off the DCI's access to GeoComply software by a certain date. In a January 23rd court motion, defense attorneys for Iowa State University players alleged Sanger had testified in a deposition that he did not obtain a warrant before checking for betting activity using GeoComply's software. 2 days later, Engel again emailed the Gaming Commission, writing that GeoComply would cut off the DCI's access to the company's software by the end of January 26th. Defense attorneys later obtained the email from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission through a public records request, leading them to accuse the DCI of withholding key information in the cases against their clients. Defense attorneys also alleged that DCI Special Agent Mark Ludwig, in his own deposition, testified that he had been misled during the investigation, saying that based on representations by his supervisor, he told former Iowa State defensive lineman Isaiah Lee that he was not the target of a criminal investigation. Lee was later charged. News of Sanger's warrantless search sparked criticism around the state. State Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat from Des Moines, said at the Capitol, said, "Will DCI be conducting warrantless searches on other kids? Where else are Iowans' privacy rights being violated?" Keith Murphy said on the air, "Most of us are more concerned with constitutional rights than $5 parlays. Basic liberties were infringed upon," said University of Iowa wrestling coach Tom Brands during our news conference. In Story County, prosecutors dismissed charges against five defendants in March. In four of the cases, an assistant state attorney cited GeoComply's decision to strip the DCI of the company's tool. A prosecutor wrote that GeoComply had not responded to his calls seeking more information. GeoComply has also not responded to multiple interview requests from the Register. When a reporter visited Story County Attorney Tim Meals' office on April 3rd, his assistant said Meals was in a meeting, but that he had told her he was not real interested, quote-unquote, in discussing the cases. Johnson County Attorney Rachel Zimmerman Smith's office prosecuted the last pending cases in her jurisdiction, even after learning that the DCI had lost access to GeoComply's tool. Excuse me. Asked whether she thought DCI agents needed a warrant to check better betting activity on GeoComply's software, Zimmerman Smith told the Register in an email, "Prior to charging, we did a thorough review. We are satisfied that all evidence was obtained by lawful means." Orrin Kerr, a law professor and Fourth Amendment expert at the University of California, Berkeley, agreed with Zimmerman Smith that the warrantless searches were legal. He told the Register that DCI agents did not need a warrant to track bettors' locations with GeoComply's software. While courts have yet to weigh in on many elements of how law enforcement officers have used geolocation data, Kerr said the police do not need a warrant when all parties freely give up their data. In the Iowa cases, the defendants agreed to share their data with DraftKings and FanDuel. These companies, in turn, shared the data with GeoComply, which shared it with the DCI. Those agreements amounted to a chain of consent, Kerr said. The Fourth Amendment's requirement of warrants centers on whether the government can forcefully take evidence. In Iowa, the DCI did not use force. Kerr said, "It's like your roommate allowing the police to search your apartment. You might not want your roommate to do that, but they can. They have authority over your apartment, in the same way that GeoComply has authority over the data." While GeoComply has not explained its shifting relationship with Iowa law enforcement, the company does have a financial incentive to encourage betting. GeoComply's revenues come from contracts with sportsbooks, which receive more revenue as users bet more. GeoComply has also at least explored a business model that more directly relies on users' betting activity. In October 2022, the company told Gaming Commission officials that GeoComply was contemplating a contract that would pay the business a percentage of sportsbook's revenue, as opposed to a flat fee. At least one Gaming Commission employee raised concerns. It would put GeoComply's skin in the game from a revenue perspective. So at the juncture, would they look the other way if a whale with a certain sports book was flagged? Wrote Gaming Commission sports programming manager Daniel Lawn, referring to a high roller. Others at the commission did not share Lawn's concerns. "All gaming in Iowa is a revenue-driven business," said Ian Hudson, the commission's director of gaming. "This argument could easily be applied to any licensee or business, so I'm not sure why he would want to distinguish GeoComply." Okay, back to you, Pat.
Okay, and our next front page story is also a long one, Deanna, so I think we'll split this one up as well. Private psychiatric hospital proposed Iowa's third facility could ease the shortage of care. Tony Lays of KFF Health News, I think that's Kaiser Family Health News, wrote this article in Dateline Grinnell. "A for-profit company has proposed turning a boarded-up former nursing home here into a psychiatric hospital, joining a national trend toward having such hospitals owned by investors instead of by state governments or nonprofit health systems." The company sees a business opportunity in the shortage of inpatient beds for people with severe mental illness. The scarcity of inpatient psychiatric care is evident nationwide, especially in rural areas. People in crisis often are held for days or weeks in emergency rooms or jails and then transported far from their hometowns when a bed opens in a distant hospital. 8 nonprofit Iowa hospitals have shuttered their psychiatric units since 2007, often citing staffing and financial challenges. Iowa closed 2 of its 4 mental health institutions in 2015. Iowa now ranks last in the nation for access to state-run psychiatric hospitals, according to the Treatment Advocacy Center, the national group which promotes improving care for people with severe mental illness. Recommend states have at least 50 state-run psychiatric beds per 100,000 people. Iowa has just 2 such beds per 100,000 residents, the group said. 2 out-of-state companies have developed psychiatric hospitals in Iowa in the past 4 years, and now a 3rd company has obtained a state certificate of need to open a 60-bed facility in Grinnell. Before 2020, Iowa had no privately owned freestanding psychiatric hospitals, but several national companies specialize in developing such facilities which treat people in crisis from conditions such as depression, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder, sometimes compounded by drug or alcohol abuse. One of the companies operating in Iowa, Universal Health Services, says it has mental health facilities in 39 states. Lisa Daly, the Treatment Advocacy Center's executive director, said that for-profit hospitals don't necessarily provide worse care than nonprofit ones, but that they tend to be less transparent and more motivated by money. She said, "Private facilities are private. As a result, you may not have a great insight into why they make the decisions that they make." Daly said that solid data on privately run mental health hospitals nationwide is scarce, but she has heard for-profit companies have recently set up freestanding psychiatric hospitals in several states, including California. The California Department of Public Health confirmed 3 such facilities opened there since 2021 in Aliso Viejo, Madera, and Sacramento. The latest Iowa psychiatric hospital would be housed in a vacant nursing home on the outskirts of Grinnell, a college town of 9,500 people in a rural region of the state. The project's developers note that there are no other inpatient mental health facilities in Poweshiek County, where Grinnell is located, or in any of the 8 surrounding counties. The nearest inpatient mental health facilities are 55 miles west in Des Moines. The Indiana-based company proposing the hospital, Hickory Recovery Network, primarily runs addiction treatment centers in Indiana, but it opened psychiatric hospitals in Ohio and Texas in 2023 and 2024, and it told Iowa regulators it could open the Grinnell Hospital by August. An affiliated company ran the facility as a nursing home called the Grinnell Healthcare Center until 2022, according to a Hickory Recovery Network filing with Iowa regulators. Medicare rated the nursing home's overall quality at just 2 out of 5 stars, and in 2020, the facility was suspended indefinitely from Iowa's Medicaid program because of billing issues, state records show. Does company proposing Grinnell Hospital have ties to the former troubled nursing home there? Officials from Hickory Recovery Network responded only briefly to a Kaiser Family Health News inquiry, including about how the former Iowa nursing home's spotty record could affect the proposed psychiatric hospital. In a short telephone interview in February, Melissa Durkin, the company's chief operating officer, declined to say who owns Hickory Recovery Network. Durkin denied in the interview that her organization was associated with the company that ran the defunct and troubled Grinnell Nursing Home. However, Hickory Recovery's application for a certificate of need refers to the nursing home operator as Hickory's affiliated company. In testimony before Iowa regulators, Durkin made a similar reference as she expressed confidence her organization could find sufficient staff to reopen the facility as a psychiatric hospital. She said in a video recorded hearing, "We have a history with that building. We operated a nursing home there before." Durkin said in the interview that company leaders had not decided for sure to redevelop the vacant Iowa nursing home into a psychiatric hospital, although they twice went through the complicated process of applying for a state certificate of need for the project. The first attempt was stymied in 2023 by a tie vote on the board that considers such permits, which are a major hurdle for large healthcare projects. The second application was approved by a unanimous vote after a hearing on January 25th. Carrie Lynn Powers, a Hickory executive, told regulators the company planned to spend $1.5 million to remodel the building. The main changes would include making rooms safe for people who might be suicidal, she said. The company predicted in its application that 90% of the hospital's patient revenues would come from Medicare or Medicaid, public programs for seniors or people who have low incomes or disabilities. It doesn't mention that the nursing home was suspended from Iowa's Medicare program, which covers about half of the state's nursing home residents. Iowa authorities suspended the Grinnell Health Care Center nursing home in 2020 for failing to repay nearly $25,000 in overpayment from Medicaid, state records show. When the nursing home closed in 2022, its former medical director told the local newspaper part of the reason for its demise was its inability to collect Medicaid reimbursements. Iowa administrators recently notified the owners that the former nursing home owed $284,667 to Medicaid. A state spokesperson said in March that neither amount has been repaid.
All right. CEO of Clive Private Hospital says staffing is a struggle. The proposal to reopen the building as a psychiatric hospital won support from patient advocates, Grinnell's nonprofit community hospital, and the regional mental health coordinator. The only opposition at the state's hearing came from Kevin Pettit, a leader of one of Iowa's two other private freestanding psychiatric hospitals. Pettit is chief executive officer of Clive Behavioral Health Hospital, a 100-bed facility in suburban Des Moines that opened in 2021. Pettit told regulators he supports expanding mental health services, but he predicted the proposed Grinnell facility would struggle to hire qualified employees. He said despite strong demand for care, many Iowa psychiatric facilities are limiting admissions. He said, "The beds exist, but they're not actually open because we're dealing with staffing issues throughout the state." Overall, Iowa has 901 licensed inpatient mental health beds, including in psychiatric units at community hospitals, in freestanding psychiatric hospitals, and in the two remaining state mental health institutes, according to the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. But as of January, just 738 of those beds were staffed and being used. Pettit's facility is run by Pennsylvania-based Universal Health Services in partnership with Mercy One, a hospital system based in the Des Moines area. In an interview, Pettit said his hospital has enough staff to use only about half of its beds. He said it is especially difficult to recruit nurses and therapists, even in an urban area with a relatively robust labor supply. State inspectors have cited problems at the Clive facility, including four times declaring that deficiencies put patients' safety in immediate jeopardy. Those issues included insufficient staff to properly monitor patients and insufficient safeguards to prevent access to items patients could use to choke or cut themselves. Pettit said such citations are not unusual in the tightly regulated industry. He said the organization is committed to patient safety. He wrote in an email, "We value the review by our regulatory entities during the survey process and view any finding as an opportunity for continuous improvement of our operations." Iowa's other privately owned psychiatric hospital, Eagle View Behavioral Health in Bettendorf, also has been cited by state inspectors. The 72-bed hospital was purchased in 2022 by Summit BHC from Strategic Behavioral Health, which opened the facility in 2020. Both companies are based in Tennessee. State inspectors have cited the Bettendorf facility twice for issues posing immediate jeopardy to patient safety In 2023, inspectors cited the facility for insufficient supervision of patients, resulting in inappropriate sexual activity between adult and adolescent patients. In 2021, the facility was cited for insufficient safety checks to prevent suicide attempts and sexual misconduct. Eagleview officials did not respond to requests for comment. Advocates for Iowa patients have supported the development of freestanding psychiatric hospitals. Leslie Carpenter of Iowa City, whose adult son has been hospitalized repeatedly for severe mental illness, spoke in favor of the Grinnell facility's application for a certificate of need. In an interview afterward, Carpenter said she was optimistic the new facility could find enough staff to help address Iowa's critical shortage of inpatient psychiatric care. She said she would keep a close eye on how the new facility fares. She said, "I think if a company were willing to come in and do the job well, it could be a game changer." Pat, back to you.
Thank you, Dan. And before we go to the Metro and Iowa section, we have two other Iowa-related stories in the main section of the Register. First one is a plea is expected for ex-Simpson professor in a murder case. William Morse of the Register wrote this article. A former Simpson College professor charged with murdering her husband in 2020 intends to plead guilty in a deal with prosecutors, according to new court filings. Gwen Park, age 45, is charged with murder in the death of 41-year-old Sung-Woo Nam at the company's West Des Moines condominium. Police responded to the residence on February 15, 2020, found Nam tied to a chair with his hands and feet bound. One of the cords binding him wrapped around his neck, and the cause of death, according to court documents, was strangulation. Park, at the time an economics professor at Simpson, reportedly told officials her husband was abusive and had given her permission to tie him up when he became violent. The case has been working its way through the courts for years. The district court initially ruled multiple police interviews with Park, a Korean immigrant for whom English was a second language, could not be used as evidence against her. The court found that police effectively detained her without advising her of her Miranda rights, continued questioning her after she asked for a lawyer, and implied she would be treated with leniency if she spoke with them. The Iowa Court of Appeals later partially reversed that decision, and in 2023, the Iowa Supreme Court overturned it entirely, ruling that all the interviews had been legally conducted. Park's trial was repeatedly scheduled and postponed, most recently for March 18th. Another hearing had been set for April 25th, but on Thursday, Judge Brad McCall converted that court date to a plea hearing, writing in his order that the parties had informed him they'd reached a plea agreement. The terms of that deal are not yet publicly available, and Park's attorneys declined to comment. If convicted of first-degree murder, Park faces a mandatory life sentence without parole. And from Grimes, their pole position indoor go-karting reopens as K1 Speed. An indoor go-karting center in Grimes reopened recently with a new name, track and go-karts. Position Raceway, located at 1350 Southeast Gateway Drive in Grimes, was acquired by Irvine, California K1 Speed in March, said K1 spokesperson Ryan Jerneka. K1 acquired all pole position raceway chains in August 2022, but the Grimes location remained independently owned until K1 purchased it, Jerneka said. K1 now has 86 locations in 30 states and 7 countries, including a location in the Kansas City suburb of Lee Summit, Missouri. K1 has widened the Grimes Raceway track to make passing easier and safer and increased the length of the main straightaway, Jerneka said. It also improved barriers on the track. Jerneka said, "These barriers don't move around at all. Unlike the old ones, they're firmly seated into the ground and absorb impacts much better than the system that was there." The Grimes Center is the first in the K1 chain with OTL Storm go-karts powered by lithium-ion batteries and do not lose torque as the charge depletes, Jerneka said. Many areas also got new coats of paint, and the company remodeled the arcade, he said. In addition, he said K1 promises a more serious approach to racing. Their hours are from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday, 12 p.m. to 12 midnight on Friday, 10 a.m. to midnight on Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Sunday. A $7.95 annual license is required to race and includes a free race on the driver's birthday, helmet use, and a reusable head sock. Races run until a driver completes 12 laps and costs $26.95 with discounts for 2 and 3 race packages. Jerneka said, the feedback from diehards regulars has been tremendous, and I really enjoyed the upgrades to both track and kart and our improved marshaling of the races. Deanna?
Thank you, Pat. A brief article on the eclipse. I know you've heard a lot of stories about that. Hundreds gather outside the observatory to view the eclipse. This is from Jose Mandiola. Waves of excited and rapid conversation overlapped each other outside the Drake Municipal Observatory just after noon on Monday as people gathered in the hopes of glimpsing a partial solar eclipse on a sunny and windy day. Hundreds of faces, clad in eclipse glasses, tilted up toward the sky as the moon edged its way in front of the sun at around 12:50 p.m., reaching its peak at 83.5% coverage in Des Moines more than an hour later at 1:58 p.m. Spectators at the party gasped and pointed to the partially eclipsed sun with open mouths as a muted brightness washed over them. Hosted by the Science Center of Iowa, the free family-friendly event attracted hundreds of people to watch the rare solar phenomenon with the observatory's telescopes and eclipse glasses. Evan Ruckel, aged 8, was excited to see his first eclipse, he said, as his siblings, James, 10, and Julia, 7, took turns to watch the sun through one of the special telescopes on display for the watch party. Julia said, I'm excited to see the moon cover the sun because I've never seen it before. It was important for the children to see the historic event, their mother, Megan Ruckel, told the Des Moines Register. She said, anytime they can see something in person and be part of it is so important. I used to come out here as a kid, and it's nice to see them here for their first eclipse. Most of the spectators took the precaution of wearing their eclipse glasses. Other spectators, like Ron Hurd, made sure there were no loose ends when it came to safety. Hurd sat in the middle of 4 small American flags, wearing a colander on his head with antennas made of aluminum foil and a coat hanger. Hurd, who had traveled to Nebraska for a total solar eclipse in 2017 and is a self-proclaimed veteran of eclipse viewing, said he wears the headgear to protect himself from potentially harmful cosmic rays. Hurd said, I'm expecting a lot of fun. I'm not expecting to see a whole lot of the eclipse because we're not in totality. Although some spectators made sure they weren't going to be hurt by cosmic rays, some were on the lookout for more earthly dangers like golf balls. The observatory is located inside the Waveland Golf Course, which caused frustration among golfers, some saying they paid more than $40 per person to play on the course. Golfers yelled, "Four!" as hundreds of spectators walked through the course to get access to the watch party. Some of the Science Center officials had to hold up their hands and direct traffic for everyone's safety as golfers swung over their path. Connie Horseman, speaker from her golf cart, said golfers had to be careful at the crowded event. She said, it's pretty hilarious that they're completely oblivious to what we're doing out here, said Horseman, who was golfing with her husband. I don't want to kill somebody. The Horsemen didn't have their eclipse glasses when they were on the course, but the register loaned them a pair so the couple could see a glimpse. They drove off near the event to get eclipse glasses of their own. And in the paper on another page, it shows a picture of a statue of George Washington. I think that was in the state of Maine. And on the statue of George Washington are solar eclipse glasses, which I think is kind of hilarious. Pat, back to you.
Thank you, Deanna. From the Metro and Iowa section, the lead story here is correction employees alleged racial bias. 4 are suing the Department of Corrections, saying harassment has been constant. Clark Kaufman wrote this article, and he's with the Iowa Capital Dispatch. 4 black women employed by the Iowa Department of Corrections are suing the state for alleged discrimination based on race and color. Cameron Gowdy, Kanesha Woods, Chantel Lewis, and Zier Renfro are suing the department as well as several top administrators alleging violations of the Iowa Civil Rights Act. Gowdy, age 53, has worked for the Department of Corrections since 2004 as a residential manager and currently works at the Fresh Start Women's Center in Des Moines. She alleges that over the past 20 years, she has been continuously subjected to harassment by DOC personnel, DOC is the Department of Corrections, and claims that when DOC Director Jerry Evans hired her, he said she'd have to contend with what the lawsuit calls 10% haters. She alleges the department consistently excludes her from management meetings in which issues involving her team are addressed, and that other people in her same position have received multiple employment perks never offered to her. She also claims the department has failed to provide her with the required training to ensure her best job performance. Woods, age 35, alleges that since she began working for the Department of Corrections as a residential officer in 2013, she has been subjected to almost daily harassment and racially motivated behavior. She claims the Department of Corrections officials have repeatedly made efforts to degrade and ostracize her for being an assertive black woman, and claims one Department of Corrections administrator recommended she not be promoted because she was a, quote, radical person, unquote, who did not get along with others. Part of Woods' complaint is based on an allegation that a top administrator entered her office on three occasions despite Woods having a do not disturb sign on her office door, and that the same administrator referred to her by her first name rather than using her job title or doctorate title. She says she also filed a formal grievance after a Department of Corrections administrator asked her for contact information for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Lewis, age 54, alleges that she has faced harassment since she began working for the DOC as a residential officer in 2018. One administrator stepped into her personal space and yelled in her face, she alleges, and another called her bossy, loud, and a low performer. Renfrow, age 29, began working for the Department of Corrections in 2021 as a residential officer. She alleges she was once verbally attacked by a coworker and that she feared for her life afterward. After she received a promotion, she says, nearly everyone congratulated her except for one administrator who didn't care for her. The lawsuit filed in Polk County District Court seeks unspecified damages for violations of the Iowa Civil Rights Act based on race and color and for failure to provide job training. The Department of Corrections has yet to file a response to the lawsuit. Deanna?
All right, a motorcycle hits a turning Jeep, leaving 41-year-old rider dead. A motorcyclist died Sunday of injuries suffered in a collision with a Jeep on East University Avenue in Des Moines, according to police report. The man, aged 41, was riding east at 2 o'clock when he struck the passenger side of the Jeep, driven by a woman, aged 61, who was turning left from westbound University onto southbound East 16th. Despite wearing a helmet, the motorcyclist was critically injured and died as Des Moines Fire Department medics were transporting him to a hospital. It said the potential contributing factors to the accident included failure to yield and excessive speed. The release did not identify the motorcyclist or the driver or say whether there were additional injuries. No charges or citations were filed, the release said, adding that the investigation continued. It was the city's fourth fatal vehicular accident of 2024. Des Moines apartment fire leaves one in critical condition. A fire early Sunday at a Des Moines apartment complex left one resident severely injured and displaced several others. A caller reported smoke in the hallways of at 6010 Creston Avenue in the River Oaks apartment, a little over a mile south of Valley Junction on the Raccoon River, at about 12:30 in the morning. When police and firefighters arrived, a tenant directed them to a first-floor apartment that appeared to be the source of the smoke. The release said the tenant had attempted to enter the apartment in search of the 65-year-old man who lived there, but was driven back by the fire. He said firefighters located the man and evacuated him by a bedroom window. He was taken to a hospital where he was listed in critical condition. The release said firefighters also were able to rescue a pet from the apartment, which was determined to be the source of fire. Firefighters extinguished the fire, and Polk County Emergency Management was assisting residents displaced by the damage. They said the fire remained under investigation later on Sunday. Polk County property records list the owner of the 30-unit, 33-story building as Arlington Apartments of Newport Beach.